Everybody, I'm Tom Dorsey.
I'm Jay Gregnani.
And I'm David Clark.
29th of January, 2018. And as January goes, so goes
the rest of the year.
The rest of the year, but we still got 2 days left, three days left?
Two and a half days left. Yeah. But it looks good so far.
So what is it?
Barring some major collapse, through Friday, the S&P was up 7.5%. Market's down a little bit today. But it's interesting when you look at January. Had January ended last Friday, the S&P 500 was up 7.5%, which when you go back in history and the S&P 500 would be good enough for the sixth best January ever for the S&P 500. So we'll see it, you know, where we shake out over the next 2.5 days. But it looks like January will be a positive month.
I wonder if there's a way of going back there to the sixth best. When you look at how much we're overbought right now.
Yeah.
You have to go back to 1961.
Yeah.
To see that.
To see any number that high.
But we're overbought, extremely overbought. We're going to talk about that in a second, with very low volatility.
That's right.
So where does that come in back in 61? Was that the case? I bet it was, because as the market goes up, volatility contracts. But when I look at this normal distribution bell curve, and this you can get, it's called implied momentum. If you're a client of ours, go into your system, your welcome page. Go to that little gear up there.
Links of interest box, yeah. And you'll see the implied momentum bell curve is linked in there.
Yeah. That comes from Jim Yates of DYR and Associates. And I remember when I took his service, he was a great friend of mine. I was the only one that he let teach the options class at the Options Institute in Chicago, teach his part of the class. And I took this service, and all of a sudden one day, as usual, in a large company, everybody had to cut 20%, you know, from the services. So I looked at his service, and I couldn't figure it out. I said, you know, it's all these symbols, and I turned it sideways and upside down. I couldn't get it. So I called him up. I said, Jim, I said, you know, we're going to have to cut 20%. I don't understand what I'm seeing when I get from you. I got to cut yours out. And he said, don't do it. And I'll never forget this. He said, I'm going to come next Tuesday and talk to you and Watson. So he came down and explained what we had. And I said, oh, my Lord. I said, I never knew that. I said, that's statistics 101. That's the normal distribution, the bell curve. And then when you see what he did by taking the Standard & Poor's 500 symbols, each symbol has its own normal distribution, has its own own bell curve. You know, utility would be a small bell curve. Something like Google would be a wide curve. They all are placed under the big picture, the big curve, where they would be on their own system, or their own distribution. I said, wow. I said, my God, that's the Econ 101 and Stat 101, the only two things that made any sense to me in college. That's if they could have given me those first two classes and said, okay, you're out of here.
Done.
I'm done. Let's go.
Pass with flying colors.
Those are the two things that I use every day of my life. So when you look at this curve now, and you look at implied volatility, and I want you to go to that on our system, take a look at it, you're going to see an extremely overbought condition. So when you look at zone 1, zone 2, zone 3, zone 4, zone 5, those are standard deviations. Mm-hmm. In your normal distribution, bell curve is made up of 6 standard deviations. The term standard deviation scares people, so Jim changed it to zone. Okay, zone doesn't scare anyone.
No.
So when you look at zone 3, 2, and 1, i.e. left-hand side of the bell curve. There's only a handful of stocks there.
Not many.
All the rest are on the overbought side of the ledger. What that would tell Jim Yates would tell you, is he would say, the only strategies that you would do here is you would buy puts for speculation, buy puts on stocks that you own for protection, bear spreads, anything that was defensive when you see this picture. Mm-hmm. So you go back to 1961, which we just did.
Yeah,
that's going to be an interesting discussion, because I remember when I came into the business in 1974, 75 in there, I was studying in 74 for the Series 7. 75, I started actually as a broker. I remember we had commodity brokers in the office. And that was something that Merrill Lynch had in every single branch. Why? Commodities were hot as a firecracker back then. During the 60s, commodities were a very big play. We just had commodities move up to number 3, right?
Right. Last Thursday, we actually had commodities overtake fixed income for that number 3 spot. So convenient timing is what we were leading to.
Yeah, so I'm going to stop talking here in a second. But what I'm going to do for Wednesday is I'm going to talk to my old buddies. One, Tony Fadul. I used to sit right behind him at Merrill Lynch. Great guy. Was in the business, my age, but he was in the business a lot earlier than I was. He was in the back office working, going to VCU. And he'll remember exactly what the deal was. I'm going to call Tony. And on Wednesday on our podcast, we're going to talk about what the markets were like in 61 through 1974.
Yeah, and that'll be an interesting discussion. Just looking, as we mentioned, I mean, the S&P 500 closed Friday at 168% overbought on its weekly distribution. If you just look at the chart, you can see that number up there on the top. And again, you have to go back to November of 61 until you've seen a reading that is anywhere close to 168% overbought. And that's, you know, that's been the case for really the past 4 weeks. You've seen the market continue to get more and more overbought. And that's, while we're looking at numbers and readings that are that we haven't seen in many, many years, is certainly suggestive that in bull markets, you do tend to get, the market gets overbought and continues to stay overbought. And, you know, pullbacks are generally used as opportunities to add to new positions. Have a lot of, taken a lot of calls over the past, you know, really couple weeks now of what do I do today? How do I approach this market today? And certainly being long has been the right answer for a long time, but as you're getting new money in, you know, how do you put that into work? And so having a game plan of adding to positions on pullbacks is certainly one way to do it. If you've got positions and you've got nervous clients, buying protective puts is certainly another way to do that. You're in the heart of earnings season now, and so we'll see how the rest of the earnings season shakes out. But there's a lot of right answers. There's a lot of right things to do. And to some extent, you know, if it's some right answers do nothing. Simply hold on to the exposure that you have, be positioned in the areas that you want to be positioned in, and if you have any specific questions on specific stocks, ETF sectors, give us a call. Happy to have the conversation with you. Another answer that many do look to out there is buying stuff that shows up on magazine covers, buying things that hit the cover. And this week on Barron's, there was the headline on Barron's.
Not just buying things, but selling things too.
Yeah. But you know, it says bet on Goldman on Barron's cover, and
that's
and
as brazen as it gets.
Is that a brazen screaming song?
Oh, yeah.
It's bet on them. Yeah.
Yeah. So
then your IBD.
Then you've got your General Electric cover on IBD says General Electric a shattered model ? So that would be the absolute opposite. And it's not too surprising, because when you look at the chart of GE, the stock's been in a negative trend for a while now. It's oversold. It's a zero attribute name. It looks about as bad as any stock does out there. And that's when you tend to get negative magazine covers or newspaper covers show up. On the exact opposite, you look at a chart of Goldman. The chart is in a strong uptrend. It's hitting new highs. It's got a good relative strength picture, but that's the first, you know, shot across the bow, if you will, and certainly something, if you own Goldman, be sure to take a look at that stock.
Our boardroom is filled with pictures.
Yeah.
Framed pictures.
Magazine covers.
Of magazine covers.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just interesting. I remember on CNBC, you know, we were talking about, I talked about a magazine cover, and the interview guy says, now are we looking at magazine covers? I said, yes, it's very important, because when they make a major statement on the cover, you can typically go the opposite direction. And I said, the most recent Business Week cover says, can McDonald's regain its golden arches?
Mm.
And the answer is yes, it can.
And it did.
And it did.
And it did. And it did. Well, I think it's kind of interesting to look at the market right now. You know, as we were talking about earlier, it is in a overbought stance. I mean, not only is it domestic equities, but international equities in many cases are overbought as well. So what's been interesting to me is, have we fielded those calls of folks sort of asking what to do now? Yes. But I think in many cases, the questions they're getting from their clients is, can this market continue?
Because
it's been, you know, some call it 9 years, others might call it, you know, 5 or 6 since 2011. But nonetheless, there's that hanging question of, can it continue? And one of the intriguing things to me is, from the perspective of looking for evidence to provide confidence, to me, you don't look much further than Dolly right now. And what's really interesting is the fact that you have your offensive asset classes, so commodities, domestic equities, international equities, are your number 1, 2, and 3 asset classes, while your defensive asset classes are ranked 4, 5, and 6. Well, 4, 5, and 6. And that, that, I mean, to me, when looking for some form of confidence in, as to whether the market could continue, whether it's domestic or international or even commodities, you've got offensive asset classes that are giving you confidence to move in. And, you know, I think in some cases, many will think that the first move you make in a portfolio should be to something like a domestic equities. But, I mean, as we've seen, you're getting rallies out of commodities. International has been the best performing asset class. So it's not to the extent of we always have to only look into domestic equities. Mm-hmm. There's definitely, we have a market that is giving us other options.
What did we see? What did we see in 2008? 2008 is the exact opposite. What we saw in the top rung was fixed income, cash, currencies, commodities also was involved in there, but never equities, not international or U.S. So 2008 wouldn't allow us to buy any, because 2008 we just looked at the Dolly as you own the first two asset classes. That's it, first two. And that wouldn't allow us to buy any equities the whole year. You couldn't buy it. It shifted back and forth from currencies, cash, fixed income, commodities, in rank number one and two. You never owned any equities. Yeah. So you have the exact opposite picture now. As overbought as we are going back to 1961 in that bell curve, it doesn't show fixed income. It doesn't show trouble on the horizon.
There's still a lot to be confident about.
But what might happen is, somehow these need to be switched around. Maybe commodities, you need to start beefing up your commodity. I'm going to have that answer on Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, and that's some of what we were at least kind of talking about earlier, is the fact that generally you've seen the dollar fall off in a pretty significant way over the past year. So it's becoming a environment that is good to bring investments into U.S. market. Yeah. I mean, and you know, weak dollar is good for international. We've obviously seen the effects of that, and that's been good for investors' portfolios. But now you're starting to see, you know, commodities participate in that move as well. Ultimately, do we know where we're headed? No, but there's a lot to have confidence about. That's absolutely for sure, moving into 2018.
And international continues to pick up signals and continues to close that gap and that distance between U.S. Equities, which is number one. And so there's a 20 signal difference right now, which that could change in a couple of days, and or it could be a couple of months. But it's something that is certainly worthwhile watching, something to look at. And that's, you know, if you're running strategies that are based on Dolly, something like a tactical tilt strategy, the idea and the concept that underlies all of that is try and find a way to maximize the exposure to whatever asset class is ranked number one. And if international equities moves up to number one, that's going to be an area that we want to make sure that you're maximizing exposure to the extent that process, your philosophy allows you to do so. If you're working within the framework of strategic asset allocation, we still want to find a way to maximize that exposure up to international equity should it move into number one. And so we'll continue to monitor that and continue to look at that today. But, you know, it's interesting when you look at even some of the other metrics in there. If you look at the Dolly details page, you look at things like cash percentile rank for U.S. and international being at 7% and 6% respectively. If you turn that around and look at it differently, what that's suggesting is if I'm looking at a big relative strength matrix of U.S. equity things, 93% of my universe is above cash. Similarly, 94% of my universe is above cash for international equities, such as to say that, you know, having the exposure is the most important part, and then finding ways to gain access to the strongest stuff within there. Emerging markets in general, specifically within international, is a place there. And there's a number of models on the website that you can do that. There's the First Trust International model, there's an iShare International model, there's individual products with power shares and advisor shares that are designed to be relative strength rotation strategies inside of those ETFs. So again, there's lots of ways to do it. And if you have any questions about those, give us a call as well.
You got anything else?
I think it's about
Wednesday we're going to have the answer.
Wednesday podcast. I'm good. I could keep on going, but I think we'll.
Wait to talk to Tony about it because I can remember the phone calls that he used to take from commodity customers. And that was back when every single branch at Merrill Lynch had a commodity team.
Yeah.
And I think we may be going back in that direction.
Be interesting to hear.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's going to be interesting.
And there's lots of, I mean, look at a chart of crude oil. A chart of crude oil is, you know, been in a positive trend. A lot of the other energy stuff, you know, we're not out of the woods yet for winter here in Richmond. I think we have snow on the way tomorrow or something, but so it's interesting.
All right, we'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
No, we'll see you Wednesday. You can come in for the podcast.